Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, we are glad to be with you for another hour. We've got Jalen Thompson coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk about that latest Royals move, how it fit together, some other reporting, see if he's heard the same thing, that maybe there were attempts to get a bat, and instead this was backup, and whatever it is. We'll talk to Jalen Thompson about that a little bit later. We'll give away some HTO this hour. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up in the Odyssey Studios. Lots of coffee. We appreciate them for providing it for us. Tommy, we're both music guys. I forgot, didn't know, wasn't paying attention. Did you catch any of the Grammys? I usually like to record them and go back and watch the live performances. I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, I had forgotten that it was going on. My wife had it on, and it was just so on in the background as I was doing other things. Beyonce won, I think, a couple of things. I think Taylor Swift was there. I heard Kanye West got kicked off the red carpet. Just a couple of things that I heard about, but I didn't really follow it.
Kanye West got kicked? I hadn't seen that. I know everyone's mad that Billie Eilish didn't win something.
You didn't hear about Kanye? So I don't know exactly the circumstances around it, but like he and is it his girlfriend? Because I don't think he's married now. I don't know.
You're asking the wrong dude about that.
But he and his lady friend were not invited to the Grammys. Apparently, they crashed the red carpet, and she was basically naked, like under a fur coat, and she took the fur coat off to pose for pictures on the red carpet, and they were. Promptly asked to leave the red carpet.
Who got out? Was it did Beyonce win Album of the Year?
Yeah, she won something.
I saw she won.
You're asking the wrong
Album
person.
The
I didn't
yeah,
follow.
I don't know.
It was on in the background. I don't know.
Look, this don't misunderstand. I don't feel the way I feel about the Oscars. I like the Grammys. The Grammys had the live performances, and it's usually really entertaining, and you get all the cool collaborations and all that. I just forgot about it. Just didn't watch it.
They did do something for Stevie Wonder, I believe, or at least nice. He was like performing. So I did catch that in the background.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. I'll have to go back and look. I don't listen to enough of the music now to have like a strong take on it.
Are you a Chapel Roan fan?
Is that HOTTOGO?
Correct.
Hot to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's cool. She's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She won something, and I saw her accepting her award. And
okay. I don't even know what she looks like.
I don't know what she looks like either, because she had some ridiculous get-up on to accept the award.
I heard that. My wife's actually kind of into her and played a couple of her songs. Every time I hear her, I think, yeah, that's cool.
There's like one that's good. like a pink pony something or other. I don't know exactly what that is.
Yeah, she's good. She's good. And it's not that I don't
how out of touch do you and I sound right now? Like, I don't know.
Gary, like, it's okay.
Pink
it's
pony,
not that
something.
I love music, and I'm up to speed with a lot of new music, just not this music
anymore. Not popular
anymore.
Music. Right.
Right. But there are other genres of music where I'm like locked in and could tell you all the up and comers. It's just not the music that's typically like being highlighted at the Grammys. It's not that I don't like a lot of that music. I think all that music, like, again, this is not the Oscars. The Oscars, I think most of the movies that get nominated are boring and suck. I don't think that about the music of the Grammys. It's just not what I have on in the car. So it's like, okay, I don't like that either, by the way. I want to be up to speed with what the music now is. And it'll get easier when my kids get a little bit older, but
yeah,
it's not that at all. It's just not what I'm listening to right now.
In a previous life of mine, we're talking like a decade plus ago, I was in music radio. I did a lot of music radio. I ran a top 40 radio station. I was up on all of that music because I had to be for my job. And I would always joke around that there was not another 29-year-old male on the planet that knew as much about Justin Bieber in One Direction as I did at that time in my life. And it's a completely different world of mine now and a completely different landscape in music. And I have not stayed up to date on any of it.
Yeah, it's all right. Look. Good for them. And Travis Kelce's girlfriend is usually a big deal at the Grammys.
She was rocking a red dress, and you got to think like that's a Chiefs dress right there, getting ready for the Super Bowl.
Could be, or maybe she just likes red. Maybe. I don't know.
She did name an album that. I mean, she's got an album called Red. So
yeah,
I mean,
maybe
that could have been.
I don't know. I have fun. I still enjoy that angle of the Chiefs, you know, run currently. I think it's fun and cool, and you know, everybody likes Travis Kelce. How do you not like Travis Kelce? So, you know, but the Grammys happened last night. I'm glad we could provide you nothing of substance on that, except that
it was a great recap. You know, really good summarization of what happened.
Yes, yeah, we had a good take on that.
Yeah,
Super Bowl week, Tommy, which is why there were the Grammys. It usually is on that Sunday before the Super Bowl. Man, oh man, it is all football. All football, and we're going to really dig into, you know, kind of some of these things, and the Jalen Hurts thing we had teased is a part of it. I think, you know, coaching wise, like these are just like I don't know why there's not the pomp of it this time. It's probably because it's a rematch. It's probably because we've sort of exhausted these storylines the last time 2 years ago when these two teams played. But it has brought this interesting angle of, man, it's kind of all about the game. It gets all about the game here. And they'll manufacture some stuff up, but X's and O's and all of these things, it feels the same way to me that it did for the Buffalo game. Like it's super tight. It's razor thin. Could definitely go either way. I mean, the last time they played showed us that, right? The Chiefs had a couple of big plays that turned that game around for them. It is going to be... intense, like the decision making, the mistakes, like all of it gets amplified, I think, for this matchup, because they like these are two teams that can just kill you if you let them or if you make a mistake. It just will.
Yeah, you know, Philadelphia, they're known to be able to score early and often. That's what they do, and then they can put loads of points on their opponents in really, really quick fashion. It reminds me, honestly, of the offensive onslaught that we saw in previous years from Kansas City. It's been a little bit different this season with the way that, you know, this team plays their games. But man, you know, I remember, I always go back to the playoff game back in one of their earlier Super Bowl runs where they played the Texans and they were down, 24-0, and then scored four quick touchdowns in a matter of like 10 game minutes. Like it was ridiculous. That reminds me a little bit of the way that Philly can do things. Now it's a different method in which they score. They have course, lean on Saquon. They lean on Jalen, you know, running the football out of the backfield. And then they'll, you know, sprinkle in some big time plays to AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. But they definitely can score quickly and they can score a lot of points. And that, you know, definitely, even look back to the NFC Championship game. And I know that game was a lot closer for the majority of it than what the final score would indicate. But still, Philly put up 55 points on Washington. They can score a lot of points, and they can do it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and the thing about the Chiefs is I'm not sure they can track me to game like that. And I mean, they haven't all year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine if the game goes that way. Now they, you know, they finally get their 30 or whatever with Buffalo and all of those things. But that's definitely, and I don't know that that's the way Philadelphia. That I think that becomes the biggest question, and we'll get into this. Like, I know what kind of game the Chiefs would like to play. right? They'd like to play the same kind of game they've been playing for a long time. They'd like to control the ball. They'd like to not make mistakes. They'd like to, you know, lean into the short passing game with all these different weapons, and they'd like to, you know, go blitz crazy on deep. We know what they want to do. The Chiefs to me have the clearer, here's how we want to play this game. The Eagles, that's where it's, I'm not sure what they would prefer.
It's interesting because the Eagles, you know, they're not, at least in my opinion, a ball control team, even though they run the ball a lot.
Isn't that interesting?
Like they lean on the run, but they're not a ball control team. And you can see multiple times throughout this season and the playoffs, including the NFC Championship game, when Saquon just breaks one loose. I mean, go back to that NFC Championship game in Washington, marching the ball down the field. I mean, they took like 9 minutes off the clock to kick off that game. And the very first play from scrimmage for the Eagles, Saquon breaks off a 60-plus yard run and scores, like just, you know, just like that. Like, the Eagles run the ball a ton, but they're not a ball control team. They're unique in that regard because they can air it out. They've got dynamic wide receivers and, of course, Dallas Goedert and all of that. But they prefer to have the big play, whether it's on the ground or through the air. And that's what's going to be a little bit different, I think, for Kansas City to defend that.
Man, have the Chiefs corners ever had more this year pressure on them to prevent not only those long runs, which we talked about a little bit last week, but you also have to, you know, keep an eye on and make sure over the top that you don't get beat by two all world wide receivers and then Dallas Goedert. That's the thing. Everyone says, oh, the Chiefs would like to, you know, make the Eagles throw on them. And I'm like, well, yeah, that means you stop Saquon. And I do think the Chiefs will find some success there. But that doesn't make it easy, right? Philadelphia's got this dynamic offense for a reason. Philadelphia, and this is, again, and we'll dig in here in just a second, but think about this for just a second. Like, Philadelphia, what do you want to do if you're Philadelphia? Are you reactionary to what the Chiefs present you? Or is there a specific way you'd prefer to go about it? I think there are a lot of things for them to think about. Again, the Chiefs, I think we all kind of know what they want to do. Philadelphia's got a decision to make. We'll talk about that next. Sports Daily, all Brockton Caster. Don't go away on a Monday.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily on a Monday. Tommy Caster, Jacob Albrecht here with you. We've been talking Super Bowl coverage as we kick off the Super Bowl week, Chiefs and Eagles. And Jacob, we continue on this conversation that we started before the break about the strategies for both of these teams as we get into the Super Bowl week. And I'm with you. I mean, I feel like it's fairly clear the way the Chiefs want to play this game, but the Eagles have an opportunity, I think, to be able to do it a couple of different ways.
They do, because you know what they want to do most of the time. They'd like to start with Saquon Barkley, right? They obviously want to start every game that way. The Chiefs, I think, are well equipped, as equipped as any team they will have played, to prevent Saquon from taking the game over. Doesn't mean they're going to stop him. Just means they're, you know, but going into it as capable as any team the Eagles have played. So what if that happens? Then what? Right? Do the Eagles keep going to it? Or do they now try to do what they did against the Commanders and let Jalen Hurts throw it a little bit? And I think that becomes really interesting. If you're the Chiefs, I think you prefer that because it gives Spags more opportunities to go out and try to make him make a mistake. I think I would guess that the Chiefs will be willing to sell out a little bit to stop the run, both from Saquon and Jalen Hurts, because Jalen Hurts running, it's going to be a major factor. And almost not, you know, it's not that you allow the receivers to do big things, but you're willing to give up some chunk plays, because it allows you to have them make mistakes, allows a Jalen Hurts interception. It allows you to stop their run game. But if you're going to do that, you've got to have a great offensive game plan, because in that scenario, Tom, it could become a little bit of a track meet. And so if you're Philadelphia, then like if, because I think that's what the Chiefs will do. If you're Philadelphia, how do you counter that? I would start with running the ball with Jalen Hurts. That's what I would do. And then I would probably just, you know, let Dallas Goedert eat a little bit like he did against Washington. I think they've got to, Philadelphia's going to have to throw the ball to win this game. They're going to have to. Do they want to, or do they not want to, I think becomes the question. Like, are they going to come in and just acknowledge that and throw it more than maybe they would normally? Or do they do it only because they get forced to do it? And if that's the case, I think they'll be in a little bit of trouble. I think they need to game plan. Like, if I'm Philadelphia, I'm game planning throwing the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one way to look at it. But then, you know, you also, I think you probably lending a little bit of credibility to that thought is the Chiefs have been pretty solid against the run this season defensively. And that's great. But again, it's a different beast entirely with Saquon. You know, and we've seen Kansas City be able to stop running back, the top running backs on a lot of teams throughout the course of this season. And that's great. But I mean, this is something that they haven't faced, you know, thus far. So if you are the Eagles, I mean, I think that that's where that conversation comes into play. Like, do you roll the dice with that, knowing that historically this season, the Chiefs have been pretty good against the run, but you also think that your guy is better than the other running backs that the Chiefs have faced throughout the season. And that's true. Like, their guy is better. Their guy is head and shoulders better. He's the best running back in the league. So do you roll the dice with that and just say, you know what, we're gonna beat him. We're gonna beat him on the ground. We think that our running game as a whole, and I'm even including Jalen Hurts into this, is better overall than a really good Chiefs run defense. And that's really, I think, where the chess match comes in.
Oh yeah, I mean,
we're talking about a top 10 rush defense
Saquon,
in the league.
Saquon, I don't. So, what's more? This is gonna. I'm struggling with how to even like present this properly, because Saquon has been the best in the sport this year, no question. Stylistically, though, what's worse for the Chiefs? Saquon and his ability to break them off, and you trust your corners not to let that happen in your secondary, or grinders that can just wear you down like Derrick Henry and James Cook was doing before Buffalo inexplicably went away from him. That's what I mean. Like, I think stylistically, they're as equipped as any team in football to slow down Saquon Barkley. I think run games that get to them are more James Cook style. Like, we're going to grind you down. That's why if I'm Philadelphia, I'm running with Hurts a great deal, right? I'm trying to, it's not so much about breaking off the 60-yard run. It's about controlling things through a multi-pronged run game featuring a healthy Jalen Hurts. That's what I think could get the Chiefs in trouble. Because I don't see, maybe one, I don't know. I don't see a lot of those break-off plays from Bar, and I could be wrong.
I disagree, because how many of those games throughout the season when the Chiefs faced off against a grinding running back, the one that they kept the possession, they kept the ball, they got 3-4 yards of carry, they just leaned on him. How many of those games did the Chiefs win this season? A lot of them. Almost all of them, right?
Yeah.
I think that the bigger concern, the larger concern, is whether you're talking about Barkley or Hurts, them breaking off big runs, getting into the end zone, and then it gets into that track meet type situation. That's what the Chiefs have to avoid. I think you would almost rather have them lean on Saquon and he can't break off a big one, but he's getting 3, 4, 5 yards a carry, and it slows the game down, and the score ultimately is lower. That's the kind of game I think the Chiefs want to play. They've had a lot of success with running backs like Derrick Henry and you know, Joe Mixon and James Cook and other guys like that, where the game has slowed down and they're the grinding running back, because ultimately the final score ends up lower, and I think that plays into the Chiefs' hands in the way that they want to play.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, low scoring game. Yeah, it would. And the Chiefs are going to want to run the ball too, by the way, like at least a little bit, because the best thing you can do against that Philly offense, and it's the most obvious thing in the world, is to keep Philadelphia off the field. So I think the Chiefs, whether it's running or the short, I don't think the Chiefs all of a sudden decide in this game, Tommy, all right, let's really start to air it out here.
No, I don't think so.
So especially with the interior pressure Eagles can create.
Don't be surprised if they pick their spots. Like, don't be surprised if they find opportunities with, you know potentially worthy over the top and like that sort of thing.
We keep saying that. We keep saying that, and they just don't do it. And that's okay. Like, I don't have a problem with it, honestly. Like, it's all right. And I thought Buffalo would be the game where they would if they were going to. The issue that I would see with that, those shots, is that Philadelphia does have some corners that can make you pay. And they get pressure up the middle. I mean, the interior, you want to go real deep X's and O's, Tommy? You want to go strength on strength? The Chiefs' interior line versus the Eagles' interior defensive line probably is the most important matchup of this game. I mean, in most games, you know, that's not like football people will tell you it's always in the trenches and all, and vice versa, right? Can the Chiefs create pressure and generate pressure on this great Eagles O-line? I don't remember. It was Dan Israel or Felix Johnson last week, both of whom we'll have again this week, who talked about in the line, but line play could absolutely determine this game. I don't think there's any question about that. Because it's strength on strength for both teams, right? You have one of the best that's ever done it in Chris Jones on one side going up against one of the best lines in football. Their health is something we need to watch and something I haven't even checked in on yet. And then on the other side, it's kind of two of those guys, you know, not, you know, two really good young interior defensive linemen against arguably, and I know Joe Tooney's not over there now, but one of the best interior lines offensively in football for the Chiefs. How is that dictated? Patrick Mahomes is certainly more adept at dealing with that than Jalen Hurts is. You know, if that pressure comes, he can deal with it better, I think, than Hurts can. But again, the propensity to run the ball and take off, both these quarterbacks are probably going to run around quite a bit. Quite a bit. I haven't even looked at, what is Mahomes' rushing prop? Because is it still like 29 or something?
I think it was a little bit higher than that, at least last time I looked.
I'm gonna pull that up as we're talking, because that's, you know, like he does this in Super Bowls. We've talked about that a little bit. Just go look at his rushing totals in the Super Bowls to find out like how much of a part of that. It's almost like he's just like nothing to lose here the rest of the way. Let's let it all hang. Yeah, it's 30. So So it's right there, but he goes over that. He's been over that a lot in Super Bowl games. And he could again, because that pressure could come up the middle and be rolling out a lot. Here's what I'll bet you. Patrick Mahomes rolls out a ton in this game, Tommy. Like, he is going to move out of that pocket quickly because the Eagles can get there quickly.
Yeah, as long as he can get a little bit of containment and like have that edge to be able to get out of the pocket at least, then I like his chances. And I know I've been harping on this, that some of the most effective offensive plays from the Chiefs in the AFC Championship was when he was able to roll out to his right. And he was able to get that protection, you know, where, yeah, if he stayed in the pocket, it was going to collapse pretty quickly. But him being able to at least get out to the edge, and then he's got the choice. And there's not a better quarterback in the NFL who can throw on the run than Patrick Mahomes. And so if he can break that contain and be able to find somebody over the top, that might be where they take their shots. That might be where you find Worthy going down the sideline, or, you know, even like a DeAndre Hopkins cutting over the middle, or whatever that looks like, or even a Kelce camping out somewhere to get a first down. Or, like we saw in the AFC Championship game, Mahomes uses his legs to get the first down and move the chains. Like, there are a lot of different advantages to being able to do that, but it starts with him being able to actually get out of the pocket entirely and have at least enough protection to be able to do so.
Both teams feel like they can do what they want. I got to think that coming into it. They both probably feel very comfortable in what they do. And so then, Tommy, it comes down to this, and we'll talk about this a lot this week. What quarterback are you taking? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like all of this is presented out there, when neither team is going to have some clear cut advantage going in, when both coaching staffs are currently bringing it the way that they're both currently bringing it, with versatility and finding all of that, when all of that is out there, we've got two great defenses, two great offenses, great playmakers all over the field. It's a Pro Bowl roster out there. It ultimately comes down to the quarterbacks.
And how do you not take the guy that's got three titles?
Well, you do, but that's right. What I mean. Like, that's you. Like, there isn't an underdog in this game. There's not. And so you look squarely at quarterback. Which one is more likely to make a mistake? Neither of them make a ton of them. Right. So if you don't bank on either of them making mistakes, which I wouldn't. It's which quarterback is capable of making more big plays, making that play they've got to make. And that's where, for me, you look Mahomes, right? You look Mahomes. It's just like, this is his spot. This is where he shines. This is where Mahomes and Kelsey shine, and Chris Jones, like those three dudes. It's always been about those three guys and the coach. And these are the spots where they always shine. This is a part of what has made them so great, is these kinds of games are what they get up for. And that's, to me, like, you just, it kind of gets that simple. But when we're talking about the Super Bowl, like, that's it. Like, these three guys in a game where it is like, throw your hands up on paper, you take those three guys and Andy Reid. I don't know how you don't.
I think you're right. And I think that, you know, you also have to keep in mind that they've got a supporting cast of guys that, you know, can step up at any time and provide you the big play, whether it's the score, whether it's a big defensive stop, you know, moving the chains when it's crucial, whatever that looks like. Like, they've got enough of the talent around them. I mean, think of, you know, a future Hall of Famer in DeAndre Hopkins. Think about, you know, Kareem Hunt, who has found his way back and has been an incredibly effective running back. You know, you've got defensive guys outside of Chris Jones. Like, Trent McDuffie is one of the best corners in the league, and Justin Reed has played great this season. You've got guys coming off the edge that are coming up that have played better this season than in years past. Like, I think Felix Anudike Uzomah, there were questions about whether or not he would be an effective edge rusher in the NFL. And I think the jury might still be out a little bit on that, but he at least has played pretty well throughout the playoffs. George Karlaftis. I mean, there are names all over this roster, you know, that can get it done for you. And, you know, there was something that was being shared around social media over the weekend. I think Trey Wingo shared it about the Chiefs draft class from 2022 and how, you know, none of those guys have ever lost a playoff game. Like, how wild is that? You know, you've got guys like Trent McDuffie and Nazi Johnson, and I know Sky Moore was in that draft class, and they're like, you know, it is what it is. But, like, there are other guys that are in that draft class. I think maybe Brian Cook was in that draft class. None of those guys have ever lost a playoff game. Like, that's championship mentality. That's winner's mentality. And those are all supporting guys. Not all of them. Most of them are supporting guys still on that team, still on that roster. And so you come into that championship DNA, you know, for a chance to create a dynasty. So yeah, it's going to be those three guys. It always has been,
and
the foundation,
and
the tent poles, and all
of
that.
You get to join the team that those three guys play for.
But you've also got solid supporting players on that team too.
Absolutely. There's no question. And that has to be a part of a dynasty. Everybody benefits from those three guys. Everybody does. Andy Reid does. Brett Veach does. Clark Hunt does. Mark Donovan does.
Like, think about the guys,
everybody,
by the way. Like,
everybody looks smarter and better because you have those
everybody. Everybody always talks about Brady and Belichick and Gronkowski and, like, all that. You know, you ever talk about Matthew Slater in the Patriots dynasty? Like, right. You know, or like Chris Hogan. Like, anybody ever talk about
Deion
him? Deion Branch. Like, they had James White. Like, they had guys that were Danny Woodhead that were, like, supporting characters, but they had the championship DNA because they had been there. They knew how to do it. And they were integral parts of that dynasty as well.
They 100% were. And then Brady went to Tampa Bay and won another one.
Yep.
So don't mistake it.
Right.
Right. Like, let's not forget the straw that stirs the drink in the NFL. And there aren't very many of them like that. We just happen to have two of them back to back. They are soul crushers. Like, yes, they have to have it around them. And more so Brady, because Mahomes hadn't been playing long enough yet. Brady, how many generations of that Patriots roster? Brady didn't have that guy. Like Mahomes has had Kelsey and Jones his entire career. I mean, what is this, year 8 for him? Did Brady have any player for 8 years with him, especially a Hall of Fame type player?
He had Gronk with him for, like, that duration.
For some of it, but not for the whole first part of that dynasty.
Yeah, not the whole first part of it, but had him for multiple years, the second half of that dynasty for sure.
So it's what I'm saying is, like, all of this stuff, like, all of it's out there. There's so many great players on both sides of the ball. There's great coaching. There's all of it. Just look at quarterback. Just look at quarterback. That's what I do. But it seems like a cop-out, but it's not a cop-out. It's the history of this sport. It's the history of this league. Anywho, We're going to talk a little Royals baseball when we come back. We'll get to these NBA trades on the way out, though. Want to tell you that you can listen to KFH Radio for your chance at the ultimate trip to Vegas in March. Winning is easy. All you got to do is download the free Odyssey app, log in, listen to KFH Radio, listen each day for a minimum of 1 hour for your daily entry. It includes travel and accommodations for four to Las Vegas, plus $20,000 spending cash. Get all the info with the national contest at kfhradio.com. You'll stay at the Circa Resort and Casino, Las Vegas' premium sports viewing destination. Visit the biggest March hoops party at Stadium Swim. Good luck, everybody. Pretty crazy contest we got going there for you. We'll still give away some HTO later in the show as well. A little Royals talk, a little NBA talk here on a Reaction Monday. And not to fear, a whole lot more Chiefs talk coming this week, including tomorrow when we bring in the executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, Dan Israel, who is and should be, at least, in New Orleans, will report boots on the ground for us. It is Super Bowl week. Can you believe it? It's going to be here real fast. We're all now we get all the, you know, the glitz and the glam and all the silly stuff and, you know, being there for it. It is everything but football. Like it's craziness. And so, you know, all that X's and O's stuff happened last week. Now it's just like, what are they going to do? Study in the hotel? you can tell Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes, they can't go drink beer on Bourbon Street.
They're probably going to do that.
They'll do whatever they need to do, just like they do every other time. All right, we'll come back. We'll have a little Royals talk, a little NBA talk when we wrap up this hour of Sports Daily.
You gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. We are happy to be joined by Jalen Thompson here off the top of the segment at Jalen Thompson on X, Royals reporter for the KC Star. Carlos Estevez, Jalen, keeping the Royals in the news last week after we talked to you. So let's get into it. Well, it certainly never hurts to have more bullpen arms, right? What did you think of the move?
Yeah. Hey, guys. Good to see you guys again. I thought the move was really shrewd. I thought it was a savvy move. I thought it was something that the Royals could have needed when they look at their offseason plans. You know, everyone knows they wanted to get a middle of the order of bat, but that didn't resonate in the way they wanted it to this offseason. So they pivoted. And when they pivoted, they went to the bullpen, and they thought that the best way to get this done was to get a reliever in Carlos Estevez to be down there, have an opportunity to finish some games alongside Lucas Erceg, and really just shorten the game, which is what every team wants to do in the majors. When you get six from your starters, then you want your bullpen to lock it down, and that's what the Royals are trying to do, and they have some really good options to do that.
Yeah, it's certainly pretty tantalizing, Jalen, thinking about the different combinations and the different buttons that can be pressed in the bullpen this upcoming season, whether we're talking about Estevez closing out games and Erceg in the eighth or vice versa. Hunter Harvey, if healthy, being able to, you know, come in and be a pretty integral part of that bullpen as well. I think what it does for me, and tell me if I'm off base here, but I think what it does for me is I think it solidifies the notion that Chris Bubich will probably be back in the rotation, maybe as the fifth starter. And they're probably not going to use Michael Lorenzen much at all out of the bullpen. Like, he's probably solidified his place in the rotation as well. I think that with that signing of Estevez, that kind of, at least for me, tells me that. Is that off base?
No, you're absolutely pretty much right. We had Royals rally this past Saturday, and we talked to JJ Piccolo, and he said pretty much the similar things. He was saying that the rotation is going to feature Michael Lorenzen as pretty much that number four. And the fifth spot is going to come down to the front runners of Chris Bubich or Alec Marsh. And it's going to be whoever wins that competition in spring training. And, you know, they're still going to try to look to bring along Kyle Wright slowly. And they still have Daniel Lynch and Noah Cameron and others that can potentially fill in some starts down the road. But for right now in spring training, look for Bubich and Marsh to be in that competition for that fifth spot. In that bullpen, like you mentioned, Hunter Harvey's coming back. They said that he should be on track and feel well to pitch in spring training. And, you know, they kind of got what they need, but who knows? Any of the injuries happen, things like that, but you're absolutely right in that assessment.
So what do you make of this being the preference, this bullpen arm with Estevez, Jalen Thompson joining us on KC Star, over adding a middle-of-the-order outfield bat? Was it either or? Do you think they tried on the bat and then settled on this? Do you think this was their preference? Walk us through what you're hearing on how they've approached those two needs and investing the big money in Estevez and not a bat.
So they tried. They tried to get a bat all offseason. I know you guys saw some of the reports out there where they potentially were in on Anthony Santander. They were potentially in on Jurickson Profar. We talked to Royals owner John Sherman, and he alluded to the fact that, you know, they tried to get some marquee outfielders on the market. It just didn't go their way. So they pivoted to the bullpen because Royals manager Matt Cottrell was talking to J.J. Piccolo at winter meetings, and he said it'd be a good idea to potentially get another reliever. So when the reliever market in free agency and the trades this offseason started to move in the last couple of weeks, the Royals kind of got on that train, and they realized that getting Carlos Estevez was the best option for them to win games right now. It helped increase the win profile of the team, and that's what they want to do this season. So they went with the reliever option, and I think it was a good decision, because if you look at some of the names that are out there right now, to be that middle of the order bat, it kind of isn't as strong as it was when the offseason started. So they're going to bank a lot on Hunter Renfroe to bounce back. They're going to look at MJ Melendez. Hopefully he can come together. And then they also mentioned this one key tidbit, too. They said at Royals Rally that Michael Massey and Jonathan India will get some reps in left field during spring training, and Michael Garcia will get some reps in center field and could also get some game time experience there this season.
You know, Jalen, I know that there was one point during the season last year where the Royals outfielders combined had the worst OPS in Major League Baseball. And that was when Hunter Renfroe was really struggling. And then, we saw MJ Melendez not really able to come around, and Kyle Isbell wasn't contributing a ton. Now, they did, especially Renfroe, turn things around later on in the season. What do you think the chances are? You mentioned a bounce back potentially from Hunter Renfroe. What do you think the chances are that we'll see, you know, those main guys in the outfield be able to contribute offensively at a better clip than what they did a year ago?
I think you will see Hunter Renfroe kind of bounce back to what he normally has done in his MLB career. It's just a lot of experience over there with him. And, you know, having off season to get back where he needs to be and, you know, just come in and your second go around with the Royals, you know the system, you know the environment. A lot of people forget that he was a free agent that came over last season. So he had to learn everything. He had to learn Kansas City. He had to kind of adjust to his new team. And now that he's got a year under his belt, I think he'll come back in and he might be what you're used to seeing from Hunter Renfroe. As far as MJ Melendez, we've seen a lot of things. Like he's changed his batting stance quite a bit. He's worked on some things a little bit to get back in form, get to the ball a little quicker while he's at the plate. So maybe that can spark something. But the Royals know that he has talent, and they've seen his talent before. They just need to see it more consistently. And I think that with having Jonathan India and Michael Massey potentially working at different positions and maybe getting some starts in the outfield, you're going to see Melendez go from left field some to right field some. And they're going to play a lot of guys all over the field. But you're absolutely right. It has to be those two guys to really spark this lineup, because if they don't, then they're going to have to continue to rely on their pitching to win them games.
Which is, remember they traded Brady Singer, but I think it's okay. I think their lineup did get better. I think I'm good with the plan now when they brought in Lorenzen, and I think this is all going to be good, and they're going to be good, and the depth in the rotation will become key. Jalen, we appreciate it. We'll have more next week. We are so close to spring training. And we're so excited to have you with us through that, to sort of walk through it all and maybe gubernatorial runs I'm hearing from Dayton Moore and other, you know, other things that are happening there with the Royals. But we appreciate it. You can follow Jalen on X at Jalen with an O Thompson. You can find his work at the KC Star. Lots of good stuff there right now. Appreciate it, Jalen. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, guys. Look forward to spring training. It's going to be fun.
All right, there goes Jalen Thompson. I saw on his X, he's commenting on the Royal Rumble. I actually got to watch the Royal Rumble. I didn't even realize I got it. It was a couple of buddies were like, oh, is anybody watching? I'm like, man, I haven't watched anything in a long time. I don't think I can see it. And like, it's on Peacock. I was like, wait, I have that. And so I fired that up and got a little Royal Rumble. Didn't catch the Grammys, but I got a little pop culture in my pro wrestling
this weekend. By the way, you mentioned it. How do you feel about Dayton Moore potentially running for governor of Kansas? That apparently he's exploring a run that was announced in Kansas City earlier today.
He'll be good on the campaign trail. You know, he probably should have run the last time before, you know, if he'd have run in like 20, I don't know what years they are, 17 or whatever it was, he'd have been on fire. Like JJ Piccolo should run for governor right now. Yeah. But no, I think his personality fits it well. Dayton Moore was, and I mean this like respectfully, professionally, like was a pleasure to cover because he made time. He was very thoughtful. Any time that you got a chance to talk to him, and it, good, bad, or indifferent, whether it was good stuff or bad stuff or whatever it was, he's got the right temperament for it. Doesn't surprise me. Could make a lot of sense, honestly.
Hey, the only thing that I'll say is that, you know, you've probably got really crucial parts of state government, like the state treasurer and lieutenant governor and like all of these other positions. As long as he doesn't hang on to them a couple of years too long, then I think he'll be a good governor.
They won't be his decisions. I think the most interesting thing about it is the timing.
That was a good joke.
Yeah.
Because
he hung on. Hung on
to those guys way too long. Yeah.
That's right. Don't discount the fact that there's stadium talk either, which could be an interesting tie-in to that. So we'll pay attention to that a little bit. That's going to be interesting. Real quick, Tommy, we got to cram this in. Luka gets traded for, like, I was with the masses. Luka trade. I thought this was a joke when I saw this. What night was that? Saturday night?
Yeah.
I'm like, the Mavs traded Luka. Like, the Mavs traded Luka? Okay. Like, that's weird. They just made the NBA Finals, and I know he's been hurt a lot this year. And then you see what they get back, and it's like Anthony Davis and nothing. You're like, whoa. What do you mean? Like, this is the NBA. They should have got about 46 first-round picks for Luka Doncic. Like, what is happening here? That's it. Like, it's nothing. It's a 29 first and Anthony Davis and a guy, and I admittedly don't watch a ton of NBA anymore, that I've never heard of before. Okay. That's a terrible trade. And if that wasn't terrible enough, then you see what the Spurs gave up and what the De'Aaron Fox trade looks like. And you're like, that's what you do when you trade. Like, what on earth? How do you not get the moon for if you really want to trade Luka, which, okay, I still think that's a really stupid thing to do. You put him out on the open market. You don't just lock into one guy because you want 32-year-old Anthony Davis that bad. Like, what an... It is the worst trade I've ever seen of this generation. Like, you got to go back to like Herschel Walker.
Yeah, I was thinking about that trade. Wayne Gretzky got traded at one point that you probably think about that move.
But that
as
one,
well.
Where, you know, yeah, Gretzky, the Gretzky side of that one won. The Cowboys side of the Herschel Walker trade won.
The Lakers side of this trade is clearly going to win. What's wild to me is the coordinated PR effort. Like to smear Luka Doncic out of his, you know, on his way out of town. Like all of these concerns about his conditioning, and like that's why the Mavs wanted to move him. They were concerned about his weight, and like that all may be true, but like that didn't come up until like middle of the day yesterday, as people were roundly criticizing this trade. You saw just this mechanism of PR, probably originating from the GM for Dallas. Like talking about how it was a culture thing and how big of a deal it was to make sure that he was like conditioned, and that was a too much work for them, and like things like that. They clearly saw like just the backlash from people, and now they're trying to like smear this guy as he heads out of town.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You think Dirk ever had conditioning questions?
All the time.
Like, come on. Come on. This isn't going to work for the Mavericks. I'm just going to,
I just don't even know how you can justify, you know, this move.
You, you think you're the smartest person in the room. You think you're smarter than everybody else. The only justification, the only way that the Mavs look good here is if Luka's conditioning does lead to a lot of limited playing time, which I don't think is going to happen, but that would be it. But even if that's it, Tommy, even if that's it, you didn't get enough for him.
Well, you trade, like that you only, trade a guy.
That only justifies it if he doesn't end up being the player we all think he already is for a long time. It's that you didn't get anything for him.
You trade a guy that you have conditioning concerns about because you're worried he's going to get injured, and you bring in a guy who gets injured more than Luka does. Like, that's the part of it that makes zero sense at all.
They want to win with defense. All right.
Good luck.
Good luck with that. It's worst trade. I still can't believe they did that. And by the way, I don't know that Luka and LeBron are going to wear. They're not going to play a lick of defense in LA now. It's going to be rough out there. Anyway, whatever. That just blows your mind. We'll be back more Sports Daily right after.